Welcome. Welcome. So lovely to see a great crowd here. We'd love to do market research and find out what got you here from our different arms of promotion. But I won't ask, but maybe later. We put out CC advertisements, advertisements through local Zen communities, advertisements through a local lay Buddhist community that I operate, and stuff in the newspapers and whatnot. Regardless, it's really great to have a large crowd here. I'm delighted, and I think you will be delighted by what we're offering this afternoon. My name is David Gardner. I teach at Colorado College in the religion department, where I do Buddhism and things related, and also in the Asian Studies program I teach here. And this afternoon's event is sponsored by our college's National Endowments of Humanities, what do we call it, a program, a project?
Grant.
Professorship. My colleague Joan Erickson in the Japanese Language and Asian Studies programs is currently running that program. It's a 3-year stint. And she gets a little bit of time off to do it, and a lot of money, but the money goes to things like this. And I'm deeply grateful to her for her really hard work and her creativity and her open-mindedness to provide really wonderful events on our campus of all sorts, from artistic to literary to philosophical to dance and other kinds of performances. Today's performance will be a lecture and slideshow by my friend, I guess I could say, and a very great scholar and really wonderful human being, Mr. Bill Porter. Some of you here probably know of his works, and that's why you're here. I'll briefly introduce Bill, since we're running a little late. That's actually to my advantage, so I won't, and your advantage. I won't give my usual lengthy introduction. Bill, after a stint in the Army, went and got a degree at University of California, Santa Barbara, in anthropology. And then, by some odd quirk of fate, ended up at Columbia University, getting paid to do to continue in anthropology and to study Chinese language. And he eventually got interested in Buddhist stuff and spiritual traditions, and discovered that the academic path was not the most effective one for him to continue his studies. And he ended up moving over to Taiwan and living in a monastery there, a Buddhist monastery, for a few years. As he put it, until he got further enough in his studies at the monastery that his teacher said, I think you should become a monk. And then he decided it's time to move on. I want to take on that obligation. He's had a variety of different professions. He then was in Hong Kong for a while, and he worked as a journalist. And part of the material you'll get in today's talk on the Silk Road came from his time in Hong Kong, where as a journalist, he ran a daily radio program. And he was paid, actually, at one point, to go travel the Silk Road. For how long did you travel?
6 weeks.
In 1992. And he took lots of pictures and recorded things on paper and elsewhere. Eventually came back to Hong Kong and ran a TV show every day. How many shows was it?
A radio show.
A radio show, 500 and something?
280.
I thought it was one a day for...
It was a two-minute piece of fluff, is what they how they described
yes.
it. Yes. A two-minute piece of fluff. That was
580 milk, two minutes times 280.
It was the CNN.
I was getting 560 in my head. My math is way ahead of us here. Okay, yeah. And he became quite famous in Hong Kong because of that. He said he used to meet people here and there. He even met someone at a customs at an airport in the United States who, when seeing his passport, said, are you the Bill Porter? And the guy said, well, which one are you talking about? Where are you from? And he said, I'm from Hong Kong. And Bill said, yeah, I'm the one that's famous in Hong Kong for his radio stints on the Silk Road. Bill Porter has written many, many books. I will give you a few titles here from something I printed out. He translates a lot of stuff from Chinese poetry, Chinese Buddhist scriptures, stuff on his travels. Here and there. He's continuing to write more books. The one he's working on now, for which he has a Guggenheim Fellowship, is to travel in China to many of the old classical poets throughout China and to try to find their grave sites. Sometimes you can't find them. These are people that aren't well remembered outside their poetry. Some of the more famous ones have developed tourist sites around where they were dead that are kind of concrete, beautiful, ugly. Beautiful in the sense of modern and expensive, but ugly in the sense of very little aesthetics, but they attract tourists. He's visited those kinds of places, and then those guys whose graves are no longer there because either a shopping center or something else, a farm field, overran them. He's in China, and he's walking, and he's talking to people, and he's trying to, through the farmers and other people, to find out where is the graveyard of this 9th century poet. And in the process, he learns from people, and he's writing about the stories related to those poets in their lifetime and his lifetime, trying to trace the steps and the graveyards of these poets. And the title of the book is, again, I don't want to miss it, it's great.
Finding Them Gone.
Finding Them Gone. Which both means finding their grave, which is finding them gone, and also not finding their grave, And when I asked him what happens, he described to me over lunch today, spending 16 hours a day with taxis and all kinds of other things and figuring out the end of the day exhausted, having spent a lot of money and energy and sweat, that he couldn't find the grave. I said, so that's kind of a wasted day, isn't it? He says, oh, no, that becomes a chapter in the book, too. A chapter of all the things that went into the day when you didn't find the grave. And that's just as interesting as finding it. He's written quite a few books. Let me just give you a few titles. Poo Ming's Ox Herding Pictures and Verses, related to the 10 stages of looking for and finding an ox in the Zen tradition, which are metaphors for the spiritual tradition. Getting the ox is sort of getting enlightenment. It's a beautiful take on Zen path, the Ox Herding Pictures. Cold Mountain Poems, the poems of the great 8th century Zen master Cold Mountain. The Mountain Poems of Stonehouse, of another poet. The Zen Teachings of Bodhidharma, the founder of the Zen tradition in China. Road to Heaven, his own encounters with Chinese hermits, which inspired a film on that topic as well. Guide to Capturing a Plum Blossom by an Ancient Chinese Master, translation. Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, he's translated. The Cloud Should Know Me By Now, Buddhist poet monks, some of whom may have been monks, who knows? Punk monks. The Collected Sayings of Cold Mountains, the Diamond Sutras, Poets of the Masters of China, the Heart Sutra, the Womb of the Buddhas, In Such Hard Times, the Poetry of Wang Ying Yu, A Guide to Capturing a Plum Blossom, and the Lankavatara Sutra, I pay homage to which is holding our projector in the right position today. There's a local group of Buddhists who are studying the Lankavatara Sutra who have the wonderful opportunity of meeting with Bill for a kind of a private dinner conversation about this very rich spiritual text that he recently translated into English. He's a wonderful human being, lives in Port Townsend, Washington, all he does is write and translate all day long and occasionally goes to China so he can do more of that. He doesn't have a regular academic position, he supports himself by his writing and what money his books in the U.S. bring in, and now his books are being translated into Chinese and are selling better there than here. Although the per volume money he gets is smaller, since the quantity is better, he's making a little money from both. We're happy to be here, to have him with us today, and for him to share his folk wisdom, his deep scholarship, and his really great stories from ancient days to modern days. Please join me in giving a warm hand of welcome to Mr. Bill Porter, also known as Red Pine in Chinese.
One of these days I'm going to write my own introduction. That's a little, less, because I don't have any folk wisdom or all these other things. But I've made a living accidentally becoming a writer. Anyway, I went to, after giving up academia, I went to live in this monastery and started translating Chinese texts as a way to improve my Chinese, and accidentally fell in love with the language. And I just really love Chinese poetry. And I really also fell in love with the art of translation, trying to translate something. And so that's what I did for many years. And I barely made enough to live on. And one day, a friend of mine was out drinking with somebody in Taiwan, and the guy came to my house and collapsed drunk in my living room. And the next morning, I was helping him get up, and he said, I work at the radio station and we need somebody who speaks Chinese. And so I got this job as a journalist and started doing radio and then learning how to write. And it's funny, everybody probably who writes has a different way of learning. I learned by doing radio, because when you do radio English, people only hear it one time. And so it has to be really clear. And so I worked for a news department at the radio station. And so we would have wire service stories. And you get a wire service story, it's maybe this long. And the news director would say to me, give me 15 seconds on that. And so you learn to edit. You learn to find out what the real story is in that page long thing. And you learn that you can tell any story in any amount of time. You can tell it in an hour, or you can tell it in 15 seconds. So I just started writing to make money working at a radio station. And then I interviewed a man who was the son of the richest man in Taiwan. And I told them that I've been translating the work of some Chinese poets, and I want to go to China to find out if there's any people like that and who are still hurt, who are living in the mountains and writing poetry. And he gave me this, he was so moved by my interest, he gave me the money to go find these hermits. And I went to China, and when I got back, the radio station said, you know, that'd be a great radio program. You travel to China, and you come back, and every day you give us 2 minutes of fluff. So you take the trip, and you come back, and then you write the programs. And so the Silk Road program was in 1992. It took a six-week trip from China to Islamabad, and then I wrote 280 programs, 2 minutes of fluff.